I am Christine Bentley in studio with our favorite new guest host today, Samantha Houston, a longtime friend and ex-colleague at CTV and a big radio star in her day and TV star anyway.
That's what my parents say.
Yes.
That's what my parents say. I'm a big star in my own mind and according to my family. So that's good now.
Well,
thanks
you know,
so much,
this
Grace.
We Canadians need to pat one another on the back.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Okay, so joining us now is family lawyer Jacqueline Newman, the youngest attorney to be selected for inclusion in Thomson Reuters New York Metro Super Lawyers Top 50 Women Attorneys for 2013 and 2014. Already impressed. Welcome, Ms. Newman, and Happy New Year.
A Happy New Year to you, and thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, congratulations on your award, too. Fabulous.
Well, thank you very much.
Now, it is a Happy New Year for a lot of us, unless, of course, you're a couple that's had a rough go of things. And it's an interesting statistic. The number of married couples this month who tend to lean towards divorce. Why is January the month for divorce?
I think one of the reasons that January is the month for divorce is that a lot of people actually were thinking about divorce before January. But nobody wants to, you know, start an action for divorce when you have Santa coming. And I think that a lot of people want to kind of make it through the holidays, especially when there's children involved. And then come the new year, you know, they're ready to move forward. Their New Year's resolution is not to have another year of a dysfunctional marriage.
So why, you know, what are you seeing in the divorce months, let's say? I mean, what are the months where you notice that divorce rates are higher and divorce rates are lower? Because I've never heard that January was the month. And so now I'm thinking, okay, now what about July? What mm-hmm. about September? Mm-hmm. What?
I find the big hits are usually in January. That is definitely one of our most popular times. I find that people also, September sometimes can be a little busy, usually people after the summer. I know that, you know, there's been studies done, and FindLaw.com did an analysis of American divorce filings between 2008 and 2011, and they used a legal research service called Westlaw, and they found that the spike in divorces in January, followed by a rise and then a peak in late March. So I think what happens is that people start reaching out to divorce attorneys in January. You start having a lot of these meetings where they're kind of getting information. They sit on it a little bit through February, maybe after Valentine's Day, things don't go as they planned, and then come March, usually people will kind of say, we're about to enter the summer, I want to kind of get this process going, and then usually I do find kind of a slower time in the summer sometimes, and then September's a little peak, and then December usually is another drop.
Do you find it interesting that it's almost like doctors will say about people who are terminal that they've been given X amount of time, but they will hang on for an occasion. People will die the day after Thanksgiving or the day after their daughter's birthday, or they will hang on for that occasion. So you see parents then staying together through the summer holidays for the kids because they're having a happy time and they don't want to, and then they go back to school, and that there are these milestones that are sort of attached to you know, these big life changes.
I do see that a lot. And, you know, it makes sense. I mean, you know, ending a marriage is a huge, huge decision. And I think people go back and forth a lot. I think they question their decision. You know, they're looking at their children's eyes and thinking to themselves, like, what's this going to do to them? And so every time, you know, come a holiday or a birthday or something like that, as you were saying, I think that people say, well, I want this still to be nice for them. And I'll just wait a little bit. And they feel like they want to, you know, sacrifice, you know, themselves and say, you know what, I have to do this for my children. And they keep just pushing it off and pushing it off until someone gets to a breaking point. And that's usually when they will ultimately end up in my office.
Jacqueline, let's flip to the other side of things, to the start of a relationship and the start of a long-term relationship. Can you talk to us a little bit about prenuptial agreements? We often hear them in Hollywood because each person in that relationship has a lot at stake financially. Are prenups still popular with the lay people, say someone like me, perhaps, and is it a little bit unromantic?
Well, I can say they are definitely still popular. I'm finding them actually more and more popular of late. And are they unromantic? You know, Is it a fun conversation? No. Is it as fun as, you know, figuring out what appetizers you're going to have at your wedding? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
However, I will say, you know, I've had a few situations, I'm not going to say all of them, but I have had a few situations where clients have actually, after the divorce, after the prenuptial process and, you know, the negotiations and the difficult conversations and all of that, they've actually felt that their relationships were stronger because of the fact that they learned to have a difficult conversation. They talked about money, which nobody really wants to talk about. They talked about, you know, their feelings about money and the way that they look at spending it and what's important to them. And they had this whole really meaningful and difficult conversation before marriage. And, you know, you're in your happy, you know, happy land during, you know, your courtship. And it's nice to know that if you get to the hard parts in marriage, which most people do,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's nice to know that you develop the coping mechanisms to kind of get through that.
Mm-hmm.
The irony, though, Jacqueline, is that many people that I've talked to have said, well, you know, a prenup isn't really a marriage contract. It's really a divorce contract. So I'm already jinxing my relationship where in actual fact, it isn't. It's saying, I think you and I are going to be together for a long time. So we're going to set out our plan for 30 years to come or 20 years to come. We're going to know what the deal is should anything go wrong because I'm planning on being here for a long time and I'm taking this seriously.
I agree with you. I think that there is something to be said for that. I don't think going through, as I said, it's not a fun process and you wouldn't really embark on that and kind of really put yourself out there and have, you know, pay your lawyer's fees and just go through it if this wasn't something that was really serious to you. So I agree. I think that if it was looked at as not necessarily negotiating your divorce, but kind of just figuring things out and having these conversations, you know, I think that it can be looked at as a strong thing. Again, I'm not saying that it's pleasant, and I don't want to sell it as something that people enjoy. But, you know, it's very necessary when you have things such as second marriages, where you have children involved, when you have family money, when you have businesses that you own, when you actively manage your accounts. I mean, those are things that if you were ever to get divorced can be a huge, huge litigation mess.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be able to kind of address that now, I think really can help you in the event that there was a divorce, especially if you have children. You don't want to be litigating about these things. You kind of want to know going in, this is what we're looking at. So there's an element of certainty that, you know, as much as certain as anything can be, there's some element of certainty that they can have entering into the marriage.
Jacqueline, let's talk about the institution of marriage itself. Do couples care as much? Is it as necessary a step as it was 20 or 30 years ago?
I would say probably not. Probably not as necessary. Do people care as much? I think people do. I think it's still a very important institution to many people. That said, I am having more and more couples that are coming into my office that aren't married, but have children, are functioning, you know, as a couple and a family, but they're not married. And so it's interesting how often I am seeing that, the kind of Goldie Hawn, Kurt Russell situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
well,
you know, people are doing it that way too.
Yeah, I'm wondering how much sort of the celebrity culture affects that, because we see tons of celebrities. You're talking about Goldie Hawn and Kurt Russell. I mean, tons of them that, you know, it's a totally different order than it used to be. I mean, it was, you know, first you went out and then you got engaged and then you got married and then maybe later you had some children and now, not so much. You might have a child or two and then decide maybe years down the road that you might get married.
Yeah, I think that is happening. And I think part of the reason for that is because divorce is so difficult. You know, it takes a few minutes to get married and it can take years to get divorced. And I think there are many people that don't want to create these legal obligations, but want to have the family and want to have, you know, the commitment, but don't feel that they need to actually go to City Hall and get that piece of paper to do so.
Jacqueline, let me ask you about same-sex relationships, if I can, please. I just, the question that, I feel like the couples I know who've married in Canada, because it's legal to marry here, and in many parts of the United States now, too, take that step because they are so committed to the relationship. They really value the vows, and they are committed to the act of marriage. And I'm wondering, is because they fought so hard for that right, do they perhaps take their vows more seriously? What's the divorce rate like for same-sex couples?
Well, I don't think the divorce, you know, you can't really look at the divorce rates yet. At least I can speak it to New York because it's so recent.
Yeah, right.
And it will be interesting to see what ultimately does happen. Those studies, I'm really interested to see whether same-sex couples will have lower divorce rates than couples that are not of the same sex. So that will be an interesting study to be done probably in the next 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
But as of right now, my experience, I've done a lot of same-sex prenuptial agreements, and I can tell you, you know, and whether it's just I happen to be lucky and the clients that have walked into my office, they have been, it's been such a pleasurable experience. And I was trying to figure out why. Like, why are the same-sex couples that I've had just so incredibly nice about it? And I realized, because most of them have been together for 10, 15, 20, 30
right,
years.
Right.
I mean, I literally had someone who's together for 30 years and decided they wanted to get married now that they could, mm-hmm. but wanted to do a prenup.
Mm-hmm.
And what's nice when you have these long-term relationships is they know each other. They know their finances. They know their lifestyle. The level of trust is huge. You know, some of them have families, and it's just really nice to see people that are entering into this marriage for exactly what you're saying. They're not doing it because, you know, they feel like, you know, their parents is really important to them, or they have some outside reason that they think it's important. To them, it's just really important to have those vows. Now that they can do it, they fought for it, this is important to them. And it is nice to see people getting married for that reason alone.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jacqueline, just before we go, I wanted to ask you, as a divorce lawyer, do you see any differences in how heterosexual and same-sex couples handle a divorce or a split?
Well, there really has not been a ton of divorces. I mean, we've had a couple.
Yeah.
The ones that we've had, we've actually done via mediation. And, you know, I haven't seen a huge difference. The dynamics can be very, very similar. And so far in my experience, you know, there is somebody, you know, the ones that I have had, there has been somebody that has played more of a traditional role of being the homemaker, and there's been someone that played more of the traditional role of, you know, being someone who worked outside of the home and earned income. So that dynamic was similar to some of the, you know, the heterosexual couples that I've had. But for the most part, I mean, again, couples that I've seen have been together for a long time and, you know, sometimes longer than the others. And you do see there's a level of respect that exists. But I think that the problems and, you know, the dynamics that exist are very, very similar, if not exactly the same.
And just one last very, very brief question. What demographic is seeing the highest increase in its divorce rate?
Oh, that's an excellent question. I would say probably the middle to upper middle class. And when I say that, that's from a New York City standpoint. So,
and age-wise?
Necessarily. I'm sorry, what?
And age-wise?
Age-wise, you know, I'm seeing a lot of divorces of people in their 40s.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, this has been a really interesting conversation. Thank you so much for shedding some light on this. Jacqueline Newman, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jacqueline.
Take care. This is What She Said on Canada Talks on Sirius XM. Stay with us. There is so much more to come.